Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
A happy Sunday afternoon to you. Willie P and B-Mac here with you on a Sunday afternoon in the great city of Atlanta. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, 404-741-0929 is how you get in touch with us, not only on the phones, but also on the Salomon Brothers Diamond text line. Lot to get to today, B-Mac. How you been, man? Long time no see.
No question, Will. It's a great day to be alive.
It is. It's fantastic, man. I'm glad that we finally have some of the good sunshine weather after we had like 2 months straight of rain.
No question. But I'm hearing the rain will return sometime this week.
Well, tell me that.
Yeah.
Well, tell me that. Were you able to get out and enjoy it a little bit yesterday?
A little bit. Didn't do anything drastic, but just tried to relax a little bit. And of course, you know, just looking at the scenery right now today. So great day to be outside, you know, just enjoying the sunshine, the breeze, nice weather.
I had the Atlanta United watch party yesterday over at the Gulch, and we had a lot of people over there. Thanks to all you guys who came by and saw the Five Stripes win 2-1 over Cincinnati. We'll get a little bit more into that and what's happening, and also get you ready for a week from today, Selection Sunday. We'll talk to Deshaun Tate later on in the program, and also do a lot today on the NFL and the NFL draft. And I want to start here, B-Mac, because I think there's been a lot of conversation. We had Thomas Dimitroff on the station earlier this week about what the Falcons will or should do when it comes to their plans for not only free agency, but the NFL draft. And the more and more I think about this is that you have a cavern between Chase Young and the rest of the crop when it comes to the edge rushers that are out there in the draft. Guys like Epineza, Kalyvion Chaisson, Gross Matos. Those are the guys that I think will be more in the range of where the Falcons are picking at 16. But I feel like if you take any of those guys not named Chase Young, that's going to be hard to justify, I think, at that number 16 position.
It is, but you have to address that issue when it comes to, you know, rushing the passer. And that's why a year ago I was so confused, Will, in seeing how the Falcons went about their business in drafting. All right, you go get Lindstrom in the first round, then you trade right back into the first round to go get McGarry. And that draft a year ago was so loaded with pass rushers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could easily close your eyes and pick a guy that could be an impactful player at some point in his professional career, early on in his professional career. Now, this class, like you just mentioned, when it comes to pass rushers, they're not as deep as 2019's crop.
Mm-hmm.
And you still have to find a way to answer those questions. And me personally, I don't want to see the Falcons select an offensive player in the first round.
I understand that.
I really don't want to see the Falcons select an offensive player in the first two rounds.
What if it's an offensive lineman? Someone to get at that left guard position.
Oh my, I'm throwing up. I'm going to throw up.
I got you.
Think about this now, Will. Think
I
about
got
this.
You.
Last year, free agency, they spent money on the offensive line. And then
some would argue poorly,
but they spent money, right?
Yeah.
Now, for you, when it comes to analyzing players and understanding what these players could do for you in your uniform, then you have to, you know, I think you have to display better judgment on who should get paid and who shouldn't get paid.
You're right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go draft offensive linemen. I think both guys, they have potential.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to gain experience and they will get that. But you have to find out what you want. Because the same players that the Falcons got rid of on the offensive line from 2018 go out to San Francisco.
True.
And play good ball.
And go to the Super Bowl.
In a different uniform. The same players, mm-hmm, who were very, very inconsistent. A lot of people criticize their display of football here in the city. And then they go out to San Fran and you forget that they were a part of 2018 Atlanta Falcons team, especially the offensive line.
You think about where this team has most of its money spent, it's on the offensive side of the football. And that part of it, I think, is the most frustrating part of it. The two big money guys on defense are Grady Jarrett and Desmond Trufant, and I don't think anybody out here is calling for Grady's head, because Grady was probably one of the only real contributors defensively, but a lot of people have looked at Desmond Trufant as somebody who might be kind of on that chopping block because of where the Falcons are. Thomas Dimitroff says they're not in cap hell, but you have to look
some,
at what
some
they
feel like. They
some
are.
People might feel like they are in cap hell, or at least purgatory adjacent, because of how little they have to spend in free agency. And it's not that I don't like Desmond Trufant, but I feel like you have to get younger, Reed, cheaper at that position.
Yeah, but the thing is, you might not like Trufant, but
it's not that I don't like him,
and you might not think he is the player that he once was a few years back.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
But he's still the best you have.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying he's too expensive. It's the same thing I talk about with Austin Hooper. Austin Hooper is going to get some stupid money this offseason, and I think it's justified.
Yeah.
I just don't want the Falcons to be the team that pays him that stupid
money.
And
that makes sense. I think Hooper definitely benefited from what was surrounded him when it comes to pass catchers. And he took advantage of it, along with playing with Matt Ryan. You got to think about when you scout the Falcons offensively, you got to stop number 11.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ridley, who can take over a ball game. And then you focus your attention on Hooper.
Right.
Right?
And you had Sanu for half the season,
and you
too.
Had Sanu, another experienced player, especially on third down opportunities. So, yeah, Hooper took advantage of his opportunity. I don't think he will get what he would like to receive here in Atlanta, because they know, all right, Hooper, you played well, but you're not that type of a player for us.
He's not revolutionizing a tight end route tree.
No, because if you remove Julio or Ridley, and now teams can really focus more attention on Hooper, would he still put up the numbers? I don't think so, because he's not that type of a player when you look at the individual talent at the tight end position.
That is Brian McFadden. I'm Willie P. And, of course, you can join us at Willie P. Style. He is at @BMAC_SportsTalk. We're going to talk a lot about this with Jarvis Davis, our NFL draft insider, coming up about an hour and 10 minutes from now. I know one of the big questions that a lot of people are asking, you say bye-bye to Vic Beasley. A lot of people are wondering the same thing right now about Tack McKinley. They have until basically the end of the month and the end of the weekend to exercise the fifth-year option on Tack McKinley when it comes to his rookie contract. Many believe that he's not made his money yet. And I think that's the part of it where if you look at his production, it hasn't necessarily jumped off the page to you. Where do you sit in terms of whether or not you would take his option and exercise it?
I mean, the thing that's going to hurt Tack is seeing what happened with Vic Beasley, right? Mm-hmm. They picked up Vic Beasley's option, and many people felt like that was the wrong move. And then, of course, he basically proved all the naysayers right.
Mm-hmm.
And the same could be said for Tack. I mean, Tack really hasn't lived up to the billing. I think he had, three and a half sacks a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
In totality, he hasn't really reached the expectations that many people thought he would reach being a first rounder. I mean, right now, he got 16 and a half sacks. You know, 2018, he had 7. Rookie campaign, he had 6. And then a huge drop off in 2019. Granted, he didn't play a full season, but played 14 ball games. You would think he would be able to do more than what he's done. So this is a very, very important year, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them pick up his fifth year option.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to give him an opportunity. And that's the luxury that first-rounders have. You know, they get an opportunity to really show their worth, and I think they will. Now, has Tack been a disappointment like Vic Beasley?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so at all.
Well, I don't know. Again, I think a lot of it, he has kind of borne the brunt of a lot of those double teams on the opposite side of Vic. I think Vic's biggest problem, and I've heard Chuck Smith talk about this with our guys, Dukes and Bell, a couple times. The problem with Vic is that he became too much of a one-trick pony. He had one move. He had the speed rush outside. He had no real ability to bull rush. And you know, as anything, BMAC, as somebody who played the defensive side of the football, if you become predictable on that side of the football, people will take advantage of you.
No question. And he never developed anything outside of the speed rush. And that was the most annoying thing about Vic Beasley. Mm-hmm. People that are not defensive line experts, they see you only have one move.
Right.
So add something to your arsenal. He never did. He never did. And I think you know, we all know the final story in that situation, but that was a ongoing story with Vic Beasley. You never improved anything else outside of what you came into the league doing.
I don't want to put words in our man Hugh Douglas's mouth, but basically the way it sounded like the way Vic looked, he looked like a guy who'd never been through a hand violence drill. Like, and that's, and you know, as somebody who played, that's something you have to master.
The lineman, yeah, it's like, you know, learning how to walk. You got to learn how to be able to use your hands and be violent with your hands.
Right.
Now, is that more of, you know, the story on Vic Beasley or the coaching?
That was my next point, is the fact that I'm wondering if this is a nature versus nurture problem, because if you are going to go with the D lineman, how much faith do you have in Dan Quinn and this defensive coaching staff in not only having fixed the ills that got this team to 1-7, but have the ability to develop a defensive lineman when you have failed on one of them with Vic Beasley on the outside?
Mm-hmm.
And some would say you are about to fail with another in Tack McKinley. Are you want to bring another guy in here to try and develop him and possibly swing and miss? You got to get this one right.
You got to. And that's the, you know, that's the point I talked about earlier with the offensive alignment. You know, the coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Because we saw some guys that were in uniform in 2018 go out to a whole other team and look totally different.
Right.
You know, like a different ball player. And that's the ideal setup you would love to have. Being able to understand what fits your system and being able to coach them up.
Would you be comfortable if they went best available defensive talent at 16 and it was not an edge rusher?
I would be okay with that.
Like if it's a linebacker or a defensive back?
As long as there is he's an individual that can improve the defensive side.
You need a game wrecker.
You do.
You need somebody who...
In the NFC South,
mm-hmm.
You got to have a player that can put pressure on the quarterback either by rushing or just being a quality defensive player.
Well, that's the other part of this, is that you don't have anybody on that side of the football that you have to game plan for outside of Grady Jarrett.
Nope.
I don't think.
And usually, knowing that Grady's the only guy, he sees a lot of double teams.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for him to...
And he overcomes a lot.
Yes, he does.
He overcomes a lot after that. I mean, he got himself to the Pro Bowl this year in a year where there really were no other threats on the defensive line. That's B-Mac. I'm Willie P. And this is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Your thoughts as we come throughout the day, as we'll talk a lot of football. We're going to talk a little bit later on, about a half hour from now, because I want to get your thoughts on this. You and I had this conversation in the bullpen a couple weeks ago about the disconnect between the NFL and the Players Association. We'll talk about what's happening next, including another game where the Hawks take it on the chin. Willie P and B-Mac here with you on a Sunday afternoon, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Willie P and B-Mac, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. You would never try this donut chicken sandwich. You're too much of a health guy, right?
That doesn't... Donuts and chicken together.
Yeah.
I guess it's similar to waffles and chicken.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But as a sandwich?
We had a deal, one of the minor league parks I worked at in Savannah, they did a donut burger. So you got a little bit of that savory and sweet thing going on at the same time. That was good.
I mean, I think I can see some people falling in love with that.
You want to talk about self-control. I worked at that ballpark for 6 months, and there was a Krispy Kreme right outside the ballpark that I had to pass during every time I went to work. And every time I passed, that damn hot donut sign is flashing like a beacon. Like a beacon, B-Mac.
Listen, when that hot now sign is on, the best donuts in the land.
Of course.
Even if you don't want any donuts, you're just going to purchase some, right?
Yes.
Just to have.
Exactly. It's. I will fight anybody who hates Krispy Kreme hot glazed donuts.
Man, when that hot nut sign is on. Like, you can be driving on the opposite side and you literally going to turn around.
Oh, absolutely. I've seen car accidents in front of Krispy Kreme before because of that sign.
You know what was funny is when I was in Tallahassee, we had Krispy Kreme. That sign used to be on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
All the time.
And I feel like they're strategic with it. I feel like they put it on at certain times, especially like, you know, when the kids are getting out of the bar. They'll probably put that on.
Yeah. The one in Tallahassee stayed on, Will.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was on 24/7.
The one down here on Ponce, I see it sometimes out, and I'm wondering, you know, what the hell's going on? Like, let's make the donuts, guys.
Yeah, that Krispy Kreme,
also,
man.
I have to ask you a question. I'm asking this seriously, and it's not because I'm a jerk or I feel like I'm a jerk, but am I a jerk for not freaking out about this coronavirus stuff? Like the fact that I'm not in a widespread panic and wearing gloves and a mask and sanitizering every 5 minutes.
Clearly, you know, everybody that's here in the studio, we're not freaking out about it because we're here.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think most importantly, you just got to educate yourself as best as possible, and I would imagine you're doing so. But you don't see a lot of people walking around out and about with masks on.
Right. I saw a couple walking out of Publix.
I saw a few at the airport.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my sister's flying tomorrow in here, and she's flying from New York, but there's a lot of cases, so I'm hoping that she's okay with it. But again, it's like I feel like if that's what takes me down, then the body is weak. The mind has to be strong.
Yeah, and with the deaths that we've had in the U.S., they haven't really said how they died.
Right?
Was it painful? Was it just sleep and, you're still feeling uneasy and you just don't wake up. They haven't really said. You know one thing they haven't really informed us about outside of the age,
right?
We don't know too much about, we know a little bit more about the gender.
Right.
But when it comes to race, we don't know anything about the race.
Right. And I also haven't heard if anyone has been affected by it who hasn't had overseas travel or interacted with someone who has overseas travel.
Yeah, there have been quite a few people here in the U.S. that haven't traveled overseas that have been infected by it. And I think a case here in Atlanta.
Yeah, the couple who was, they came back from Italy, apparently.
And then the father who infected his 15-year-old son. At one point in time, they were saying that, children really haven't really been exposed to the virus. And I don't know if they were saying younger children or they're a certain age, but it seems like there's a lot of information we have received, but it's still a lot of information that we haven't received.
All I'm saying is, I'm not saying come for me, coronavirus, but I'm saying I ain't scared. Here's what's happening.
Peter,
what's
happening?
We were talking about the conversation Thomas Dimitroff had with Andy and Randy on Friday's program of the Midday Show. This was him talking about not having doom and gloom over the salary cap.
I feel we're in a really good spot, meaning I understand, and Dan understands, so does Rich McKay, and so does Arthur Blank, where we are with this team, where we need to continue to grow, how we need to continue to build, where we need to put our money, and maybe not put our money. And so, again, it will take creativity. Mm-hmm. In no way is it cap hell. We are in a solid situation that's going to continue to get better as we make some of the tough decisions into this offseason.
Did they err by giving Julio that contract to go along with Matt's? Because it's hard to see a team that goes on a Super Bowl run when you have two contracts of that bloated nature. Not saying either guy isn't worth it, but when you have two guys making $44 million of a $200 million cap, that's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. You look at the most recent Super Bowl winning teams. A year ago, this past year with Kansas City, Pat Mahomes still on his rookie deal.
Right.
They have money to burn. They have to spend it elsewhere, but the quarterback did not command most of the salary cap. And then, of course, with the Patriots against the Rams here in Atlanta, we know Tom Brady has been taking hometown discounts for quite some time. So he has not strapped the organization with a huge, handsome ransom.
Are you sold on all this talk about him going elsewhere?
No, I don't see Tom going anywhere. I don't see it at all because clearly for me, the Patriots have not prepared for life after Tom Brady. I think they will do so now, especially if Tom returns. But I don't see Tom at this stage in his career going elsewhere to a new team, especially the setup that he currently has with the Patriots playing in the AFC East. You can almost guarantee them a playoff spot.
There will be no hometown discount, it appears, for Dallas's Dak Prescott. According to the Dallas Morning News, Calvin Watkins has said they are prepared to offer Dak Prescott a contract with an average value of $33 million per year, which would make it the richest deal in NFL history. Russell Wilson's actually was about $35 million per year, but the total value at signing because of the signing bonus ended up averaging out to about $31.4 million. Is Dak worth that money? I know he is because of the market, but
yes.
Will you get the output that you want from him out of that money?
No, you won't, but that still should not hinder Dak from getting that type of money. Listen, Russell Wilson is a bad man. I think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the game. He's averaging $35 million per year, right? Mm-hmm. After Russell, you got Big Ben, who's averaging $34 million, two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback. You got Jared Goff averaging $33.5 million, right? Then you got Carson Wentz averaging $32, almost $33 million, Aaron Rodgers. So you got a few guys in the top five, top ten when you look at quarterbacks getting paid that are not deserving of that type money.
Mm-hmm.
So why should Dak Prescott be penalized when you see guys that have reset the market like Jared Goff, mm-hmm. like Carson Wentz, like Matthew Stafford, like Jimmy Garoppolo, like Kirk Cousins? They were able to reset the market, right?
Right.
Why shouldn't Dak reset the market? The market is the market. It's not about the player. It's more about the time.
Right.
Because when Kirk Cousins signed his deal, was he the best player?
No.
Best quarterback?
No.
Was he even a top five quarterback?
No.
Jared Goff?
I don't think he was at that time.
No. He just signed his deal coming into 2018.
Yeah.
So, no.
No. Well, and again, that's how things work differently when it comes to quarterbacks, because these teams work themselves into a frenzy because of the fact that they are so deathly scared of having to start over at that position. So you're paying for not having to start over at quarterback. And
yep.
That's the biggest issue.
And like I said, the quarterback, that position has command a huge salary. So for players and for the naysayers to criticize and say, yeah, Dak Prescott is not worth that money, I get what you're saying, but Carson Wentz got paid, Jared Goff got paid, Kirk Cousins got paid, Jimmy Garoppolo got paid. Who
right.
did when he got his contract, his resume was nowhere close mm-hmm. to Dak Prescott's resume.
Here's my issue with it, though. If that is the case, I don't know if those salaries are growing. I think those salaries are growing disproportionate to the level that the cap grows. Like $35 million. If the cap is set at $200 million or whatever it is, that's still going to be between 1/6 and 1/7 of what your team's overall spending is going to be on that cap number. And that, to me, really hamstrings a team when it comes to what you can spend elsewhere.
Yeah, it does, but teams continue to pay quarterbacks.
Of course.
They have to.
Of course.
That's why you got to take advantage of these quarterbacks when they're on their rookie deals,
mm-hmm.
especially guys that are, you know, exceeding the expectations with their performance. You got to take advantage of, because at some point in time, when they ball out, they're going to ask for a lot of money.
Closer to home, the Atlanta United basically playing without its face of its franchise last night. First time in its home building. They had 69,000 inside the bends, and it was same old story from what we saw last week.
Left to right goal kick fell right to Yuya Kubo, but a brilliant defensive play by Brooks Lennon to dispossess Lacadia and send it up to Pitti now, right attacking third. Pitti to the corner of the 18, into the box, edge of the six, Pitti's cross, poked it for a goal! It's Barco again!
Mike Conti with the call is heard on Star 94-1 last night. Atlanta beats FC Cincinnati 2-1. Same two goal scorers in this game as we had last week, Ezekiel Barco and Emerson Heineman. Manager Frank DeBoer saying those two are doing a good job of replacing number 7.
Emerson Heineman and Ezekiel Barco, you know, did a good job to replace that goals, and so that's very positive. And also I think Pitti really played really well. And he created the first goal, was like 90% was his goal, so that was really nice to see. And but I think overall the whole team, you know, did a great effort.
Opening leg of the quarterfinal round of the CONCACAF Champions League is Wednesday, when the Five Stripes take on Club America. They will be back in MLS action Saturday, hosting Sporting Kansas City. 7 o'clock kickoff 6 days from now at the Benz. Hawks took it on the chin last night, losing in Memphis, losing both ends of a back-to-back. Really got behind in the first quarter and could not overcome it. Head coach Lloyd Pierce saying making shots not going to be in our DNA.
Making shots is not going to be our DNA. It can't be. And it's an education for the guys in the locker room that we have to bring the fight just in case the shots don't fall so we can make it tough for them.
Thank you to producer Jahi, who made me parrot the bite there. That was nice. It's okay. They shoot 33%, man. I mean, I want to be optimistic about the future with this Hawks team, B-Mac, but...
What are you thinking?
It's... They just don't play any defense, man. Like, that's the thing that just keeps getting at me, is that they don't play defense.
The defense this year is worse than it was a year ago.
Which is, it's just appalling.
Exactly, exactly. And for me, now what I'm seeing from the players, they're not playing. They're not competing.
They're going through the motions.
And that's the first sign that a coach has lost the locker room. When guys are just out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, losing the way they've lost, it's ugly. The last three games, man, the defense have stayed in the locker room.
Exactly. And you know, I want to believe that Lloyd Pierce has what it takes to lead this group through.
We might not find out
the rebuilding phase, but I mean, heck, Kenny Atkinson got fired yesterday, and that team was actually, you know, looking toward having a plan and having a future with Kyrie and KD, and apparently he comes out today. He says he didn't want to coach KD or Kyrie, so because of that, you kind of wonder if there was some other things going on behind the scenes that he didn't like. But you know, I hope
had to be because they probably make the playoffs.
I hope that Lloyd sticks around for the other side of this rebuild, which hopefully will be a lot more rosy. Braves and Yankees right now in Grapefruit League action, of course. Also, we're keeping an eye on that bottom of the fifth inning, no score there. Had the Braves start Sean Newcomb, 4 innings, 3 hits, 2 walks, 4 Ks. Been a good day for him. We'll talk a little bit more about the rotation battle coming up later on in the program. Willie P and BMAC here with you, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. BMAC, I'm going to ask you, how can we understand the disconnect between the NFL and the Players Association as the CBA negotiations continue, as we continue on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and radio.com? Willie P, BMAC, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. I know you're not a drinker, BMAC, but one of the things that apparently has become as an ancillary thing, we were talking about the coronavirus thing earlier, because, you know, people are buying up hand sanitizer and, yep, and Purell is now off the shelves basically anywhere you might go. Well, the people now are trying to make it at home, and they are going and buying just pure grain alcohol, like the Everclear stuff that we used to put in Jungle Juice back when we thought that killing brain cells was cool back in college. There's apparently in Seattle and New York, you can't find this stuff anymore. You can't find any Everclear or grain alcohol in alcoholic.
Homemade
hand sanitizer.
Hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
Wow. By any means necessary.
That's how we're getting through the coronavirus. That's how we make it, guys. I wanted to get your thoughts on this because I know you and I were talking about this earlier in the week. And, you know, these stories about the NFL and the collective bargaining agreement, I feel like we have to talk about it, but I always feel somewhat disconnected because, you know, I've not gone through labor negotiations like, you know, you guys have gone through and understanding the real machinations behind the scenes about how those things work. From your standpoint, why do you think there is such a big disconnect, not just between the players and the owners, but even the disconnects between the players themselves? Because I think a lot of times you don't see players really be on the same page. There's a lot of mixed messaging that goes on.
Well, I think the disconnect with the players and the owners more so is about the players not feeling appreciated. And being able to compare the CBA and the NFL to the likes of the NBA, Major League Baseball, there's a big disconnect, especially the NBA. You're looking at the job that Adam Silver has done since becoming the commissioner there, being able to make the players feel a part of the entire league. Mm-hmm. See, for the NFL, and remember, the NFL here in the States, it's just the best sport when mm-hmm. it comes to revenue, consistencies, and things like that. The players don't feel like they're appreciated. The owners have continued to, and I understand, I think the percentage maybe, you know, it's not 50-50, but I think it's, what, 51-49.
Basically, the deal on the table would get it to, I think, 48.5% going to the players by the end of the deal.
Yeah. And some people say that's a big deal. It's not. It's not, because think about the money year in and year out the owners are making. Remember, Goodell, his per year salary is almost $40
million. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got a commissioner getting $40 million a year.
You got a broadcaster getting $17, $18 million. No offense to Tony, make that money, but like,
you got another potential guy in Peyton Manning who could get $20 million a year.
Right.
Just to call a game.
Right.
How much revenue has been established across seas? How much revenue will be established in Vegas for the draft? Mm-hmm. The draft is a primetime event now.
True.
Everything with the NFL is primetime, the combine, the draft, everything. So many people are making money off the players, and the players are making good money too, you know, especially a few guys. But the disconnect, and then you're trying to talk about player safety and making sure you do everything to protect players, but you're trying to add more ball games.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to add more playoff teams, which would create a longer playoff.
Right.
So everything goes against what the owners are preaching.
You were involved near the end of your career in the last deal that went down. Did you feel that you guys got a good deal?
The Steelers at that time, I think we were the only team to vote no. Collectively, the entire team basically said no. And we were really informed well. Our player rep at that time was Charlie Batch, and he just broke down the ins and outs. And I remember we had a morning meeting, and we started reaching out to some of the other guys that were other teams that were on the East Coast that were, we knew were involved in their meetings, and we were trying to get a sense of what they were going to do. A lot of players, big-name players, were saying, let's get back to work, right? And some of the players that are complaining about the CBA now were basically saying, let's get back to work and forget and sign it. It's a good deal.
How much of that is the fact that those guys at that point were not on the high end of the pay scale?
No, and, a lot of those guys were on the high end.
Oh, they are.
We're talking big name players.
Okay.
Big money guys.
Because it seems like the disconnect now is that it seems like a lot of the rank and file said, yes, we want that extra game check. And those who, again, one of the big contention points is the fact that that extra game is going to cap the game checks for a lot of the guys on the high end. A lot of the people who were affected by that part of it are saying, heck no, we're not getting enough.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about, you know, negotiating, you're going to have people that to have their own views and opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's what you're supposed to have. But I think when you got to look at the bottom line and understand an extra game, like, okay, what does that do?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we watch football, you know, consistently, religiously, the majority of sporting fans in the U.S. Do you have a issue with how the season has been played?
Not to my knowledge. I don't think that anybody has one. I certainly have never had an issue with how long the season
is. And if you're complaining about player safety, number one, you wouldn't have Thursday night ball games.
I hate the Thursday night games.
Right? For players, that's something that we don't understand. And we see how, you know, you talk the money makers and the powers that be, they're talking out of both sides of their mouth,
mm-hmm.
talking about player safety. But how can you tell me as a grown man to go out and be in basically a car crash multiple times on Sunday and do the same thing on Thursday?
Exactly. And the thing that I don't get, and I find this very, very interesting, is that if you're asking this of the players, why does it seem like they're the only sport that does not know how to take care of its people after football is over? Because I see more and more people talk about that and you know, not having their pensions and not getting the ability to have, you know, the right kind of health care after the game. When you play a game that is more dangerous than any sport we play in the echelon of sports.
And that's another issue that needs to be, you know, handled accordingly. You know, what's very, very what's disheartening for me, Will, is when I watch the draft, and I think maybe on day two, after the first round, when they allow some of the older players to come up and announce the draft pick, they barely can walk, right? These are guys that have established what the NFL is, right? Built the NFL, and they barely can walk. And we're not talking about guys that are 80 or 90. We're talking about guys in their 60s,
right,
and their late 50s,
mm-hmm.
barely can walk.
Mm-hmm.
That's painful to see. And you're talking about the benefits. Goodell has lifetime benefits.
True.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
How many tackles has he made?
Zero.
How many hits has he been involved in?
Couple of figurative hits.
Not physical.
Yeah, a couple of figurative
not
hits.
Not physical.
Yeah.
And Goodell does a good job, especially for the owners.
Yes.
Right?
Well, that's who he's serving.
But
who he's supposed to serve.
But you telling me the commissioner, who's already getting paid almost $40 million a year, he has lifetime pretty much everything. You got some guys that built the NFL,
mm-hmm.
struggling when it comes to benefits and things like that. That doesn't make any sense.
And I would be concerned, too, with the type of urgency that the league and the owners are trying to show by trying to strong-arm this deal the way the players, because I think they know deep down that they're getting the benefits, more of the benefits than the players are, and that there really isn't, and there really isn't enough of a renegotiation being put forth, at least in good faith. There's not a lot of good faith negotiations involving that. Willie P and B-Mac here with you, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. We'll come back at the top of the hour. We're going to talk about probably one of the more celebrated potential departures that could be on the horizon when it comes to the NFL. We're going to talk to Jarvis Davis coming up also about a half hour from now on the Falcons draft plans. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the radio.com app.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.